Hello, and welcome back to Sinobabble. So before I start, I just want to say a big thank you for giving me much love on the first episode that I did back from this year. I came back after a really long hiatus, and yeah, it was just really nice to see that people were like happy that I was here, and I'm really happy and excited to be giving you more content that's hopefully of also good quality. Just a few reminders that Sinobabble also has a Substack newsletter, so if you're interested in more sort of like news-related China stories and commentary on what's happening in China right now, as opposed to like general topics about China, I definitely recommend checking out the Substack. I also have a Buy Me a Coffee channel. The first video for the first tier of Buy Me a Coffee subscribers is coming out, I think, this week, either this week or next week. There's one of those every single month. If you're on the second tier, you also get like a live stream with me once a month. And you also get access to the full transcripts of these episodes that you're listening to right now. Also, this is not something that anyone has actually commented, but I'm aware that the chair that I sit on is very squeaky. So I'm sorry if that's interfering with your experience at all. I'm going to try and sit very still. I'm leaning against a wall this time, so hopefully I'm not like, so you can hear it. So hopefully I'm not making too much background noise. But yeah, do tell me if it gets really annoying and I will just swap it out for a different chair. So with all of that out of the way, let's get on to the topic of today's video, which is China's fast everything dystopia and how it's taking over the world. So unless you don't actually use the internet at all, you have probably seen an advert or 1,000 adverts for a company called Temu. It's bright orange branding, catchy jingle, and just generically awful tagline have been literally everywhere for the past year. So Temu was launched in 2022, and it's another addition to this fast-paced, hyper-competitive e-commerce like middleman world. So you've got other companies like Amazon, AliExpress, Tmall, many, many more that you definitely have not heard of that kind of spring up out of nowhere in this field. This one is like dominating all the social media ads. It's got lots of influencer collabs. It sponsors lots of content. Temu in and of itself is a very fascinating case study, but it also serves the purpose of highlighting this grander ambition and strategy and the damage caused by Chinese platforms that seek to expand into Western markets. While in the West, we're used to complaining about Amazon's ethics, Amazon's treatment of its workers, the impact of buying sort of these cheaply made goods on the environment, Amazon has nothing on some of these Chinese companies, let me tell you. These companies are way bigger than Amazon, and they're only getting bigger every day. And Temu is just sort of the jumping off point to discuss this whole world of China's fast everything. And I'm not just talking about fast fashion, which is obviously bad for the environment. I want to talk about how the roles of mass production and the demand for faster and faster delivery times also plays into the development of a mass consumer mindset, where we're slowly being turned into people who earn money and then spend that money on it, on goods that have impossibly low prices and also very low quality. I want to take us on a journey of China's e-commerce, fast fashion, fast everything world, and try and cover how the intersection of technology, trade, and global economics sort of combine to create this ecosystem of consumer hell. So super easy, not going to be difficult or time consuming at all. Definitely going to be like a 10 minute episode. We're also going to talk about AI in e-commerce as well, because obviously that's a new thing that's becoming very important. And we're going to talk about some of the strategies that these Chinese companies use to study and understand and capture Western audiences, and how with this technology and information, China is seeking to dominate the e-commerce landscape. If you're one of my longer term listeners who's here for the more geeky political economic side of things and want to know how the Chinese state or the Chinese government plays into that, we are going to talk about that as well. Don't worry, that's coming a bit more towards the end. But first, we're going to start with the latest entry into the fairy tale of Chinese manufacturing and e-commerce, which is Temu. So Temu is an online e-commerce platform that was launched in July of 2022. And it was slowly rolled out across the Western world throughout that year. It's owned by another very well-established Chinese e-commerce company called Pinduoduo. And that one was founded in 2015 and has apparently made over $400 billion in total online sales. The fact that Pinduoduo has rebranded for the Western market to be Temu is not something that's unusual in China at all, and vice versa as well. Like, Western companies going into China often change their names so that it's something that can be pronounced by Chinese speakers. In the West, ByteDance is TikTok, but it's not always just for like social or pronunciation reasons. There are some other reasons as well why these companies might want to rebrand. There are some more litigious reasons why an app might want to rebrand. For example, in the case of Pinduoduo, when they did release an app on the App Store for Western markets, they were quickly identified as having lots of malware in the app. So, you know, why fix the problems with your brand and your app when you can just make an entirely new app specifically aimed at Western consumers? So similarly to Amazon, Alibaba, AliExpress, and other middleman type e-commerce platforms, Temu acts as a host for smaller businesses and retailers to sell their products through the platform. So Temu itself has no stock. Its sole purpose is essentially to host and promote other businesses. So what I didn't realize about the way that Temu hosts other businesses that's a bit different to places like Amazon is that it operates essentially a price war system where different sellers have to outbid each other to sell the same product. In order to keep prices as low as possible, Temu has formulated a series of rules. First of all, Temu requires the seller's supply price to be at least lower than the price of the same product on AliExpress. Secondly, if there are multiple sellers bidding for one product, the platform will only choose the lowest priced one. In addition, Temu has also launched a dynamic sales mechanism. If there are no sales in 14 days, or the sales volume is less than 30 pieces in 30 days, and the sales volume is less than $90, the unsold products will be required to reduce their price or withdraw from supply. Anything with a rating lower than 4.2 will be removed from the shelves immediately. According to sampling results, the price of Temu's single products is more than 30% lower than that of Shein, and the price of some standard products is only half of Amazon. Another way that Temu works to lower the price of some of its goods is by introducing extreme discounts. So when Temu was launched in Japan, they offered a 90% discount for new customers. So obviously, if you're a manufacturer, that means that you are not going to be able to make a profit on whatever you're selling because your margin is already being squeezed by the fact that you have to offer the lowest price possible compared to other platforms. And you also have to give 90% off. So for these smaller businesses, even though they get the exposure, this method of marketing is eating into their base profits and potentially also their ability to be a sustainable business. This could potentially also have the knock-on effect of forcing manufacturers to make their goods cheaper and cheaper. And this could also have the knock-on effect, obviously, of making manufacturers make their products lower quality in order to make it cheaper for them to make and to produce. There are lots of other reasons why Temu isn't that great of a company. After the whole Xinjiang cotton incident, Temu was one of the companies where it wasn't clear whether or not they had properly vetted their supply chains to make sure that there was no forced labor being used to produce goods on their platform. They've also been accused of not properly investigating intellectual property cases where vendors steal or misuse the IP of other companies without their permission. They've had several run-ins and lawsuits with a competitor, Shein. Also, on their own website, they straight up lie and say that the company was founded in Boston, which is not true. And obviously, there are other things like data concerns, data breaches that have been raised by US watchdogs. Obviously, the US is suspicious of any product, company, technology, whatever it is that comes out of China. So it's not that I would take that with a pinch of salt. I'm just saying that any website with cookies is also stealing your data. So maybe, you know, Temu using your data to create targeted ads is not really that big of a deal. In general, it's not the type of company that seems to behave particularly ethically or with the best interests of either its customers or its users very well. Customers being us, users being the manufacturing companies that host their products on there. But like I said before, Temu is not the only or the first company that operates this sort of fast consumer goods style business. If we want to look at the people who really originated this sort of model, we have to go back to the early 2010s and look at some of the big fashion brands that came out there and a trend phenomena known as the haul. So if you're one of the very, very rare female members of my audience, you probably already know what a fashion haul is, or a Shein haul. So for those of you who are not familiar with hauls, they're essentially videos of usually young women buying or being gifted around, you know, 10 to 20 pieces of clothing or decorative items, usually from a fast fashion or affordable retailer. At the peak of this trend, the most popular players were people like Shein, Zaful, Romwe, and Boohoo, the first three of these being Chinese companies. What sets these stores apart from your typical fashion retailer, like someone like Zara or H&M, is the response time to trends in fashion. So you could have seen something that was on the red carpet, or that Kim Kardashian was wearing one week, and it would be on these stores in the next week. And that's because they sort of pioneered this system, basically, where you would have a sample of something, so you wouldn't mass produce or mass create lots of a product. You would create a very low number of it, see how well that low number, say like 500 pieces, would sell. And if it sold out immediately or very quickly or was clearly a trending item, then you would start producing more as demand came in. This is really where we started seeing this manufacturing and marketing model come into play. These brands also very heavily lean on user-generated content. So like I said, giving out lots of free items to content creators and influencers in return for those influencers making videos about their content, talking about the brand, talking about the quality, wearing the clothes, taking pictures of it, put it on Instagram. And therefore the word of mouth marketing was way more important for these brands than, say, traditional advertising. So these platforms took off very fast and they made a lot of money. Shein was launched in 2008, and by 2021, they had made over $10 billion in revenue. Something that these companies also do is that they focus on very quick shipping times, because obviously a lot of these items are coming directly from factories in China directly to the consumer. So they skip that kind of brick and mortar middleman and focus instead on paying a premium on the shipping times coming down. You know, before it would have been 2 months, then it went to 1 month. Now it's typically 2 to 3 weeks. Some places can even get you your stuff in 7 days if you're willing to pay for it. International shoppers are more at ease than ever buying an expensive designer handbag from an online seller on eBay or purchasing a £5 top from Shein, but all will have the expectation that their goods will be delivered to their doorstep in a couple of weeks or less. In 2022, Shein accounted for 1/5 of the world's fast fashion market, Reuters reported. Shein serves customers in about 150 countries and has 11,000 staff members. The brand has quickly risen to outpace European stalwarts like H&M, Primark, and Zara, appealing to the young with direct marketing and social media campaigns. Those Western stores, which have had solid online presence for decades, are considered the pioneers of fast fashion. Shein strategically changed its headquarters from Nanjing to Shanghai and relies on Guangdong province in South China, a garment manufacturing district in the Pearl River Delta, with 25,000 apparel shops. The Pearl River Delta is famous for generating 40% of all Chinese exports. It's near the shipping port of Yantian and Hong Kong, and the airports of Hong Kong and Guangzhou. That helps Shein take just days to transport goods to a distribution facility to ship them to customers worldwide. The fast fashion haul era really reached its peak in, I would say, the mid to late 2010s. It started to lose a bit more steam recently as the average consumer becomes a little bit more eco-conscious, a little bit more concerned about the morality or ethics of fast fashion in terms of like the labor that's used and the environmental impact that they might have. It's actually led to a new trend emerging, something that's been deemed de-influencing. De-influencing is basically the process of making people less influenced or affected by social media influencers when they make decisions about what to buy. From my perspective, it's quite interesting because de-influencing is a type of influencing in and of itself. It's still trying to manipulate you and advise you on how to spend your money. But arguably, it's encouraging a more ethical form of consumption. But needless to say, the trend of de-influencing alone is not enough to stop the behemoth that is Chinese e-commerce retailers. If anything, it's kind of helping these companies a little bit because now they're having to become a little bit more technology savvy and a little bit more in tune with what their customers want. Now their focus is on connecting authentically with their audiences, building brand loyalty, getting more user-generated content. Of course, the best and easiest and cheapest way to actually connect with your audiences is through social media these days. And I really can't think of a better example of this than TikTok. I joined TikTok last year in order to see if it would be a good way to do, like, you know, my own personal marketing and things like that. And at the time, TikTok Shop had recently been launched, but I didn't know anything about it. But I realized very quickly that if you went on TikTok Live, that is where everything was happening. So unlike somewhere like Instagram, where you would, say, upload a picture of your product or a video of your product, and then you can tag the fact that you have a shop in that video, and then it will take you to your shop located with Instagram for people to buy from there, TikTok Shop works a little bit differently. I realized very quickly that the live section of TikTok is basically fast fashion, fast consumer goods retailers doing essentially 24-hour live streams of them selling whatever it is that they're selling directly from, mainly directly from their shop in China. It's really weird to see the type of things that are popular on TikTok Live Shop. Pick and mix sweets to crystals, fake designer handbags and children's toys, even rugs and like beads and Lucky Dip skincare and makeup. It's hard to tell what exactly makes a store popular, but it's quite clear that having like a charismatic host who like has good banter while also trying on wigs for the audience is very important. It's very, very chaotic. The host has to sort of like keep chatting with people, keep demonstrating products, but also taking orders and packing orders online and giving descriptions, answering questions. You've got to like tap on the screen to activate discounts and things like that. It's crazy. Like, it's when people say, can you work in a fast-paced environment? This is what they're talking about. Like, it is, it's very, very intense. If you didn't know this already, live streaming in China is a really big industry. It's become really huge over the past few years. It's also become sort of professionalized as well. Like, you can get qualifications in China for becoming a live streamer. There are currently over 130 million live streamers in China. Obviously, not all of them are hired by actual companies or they're not making money from it. But it just goes to show that it's a really rising industry, sort of like the influencer or content creation industry in the West is also this big industry now. The idea or the concept of making money from your personality, from your charisma, your ability to hold a conversation or present things really well has taken on its own form in China. And I think that's quite interesting to see coupled with the rise in youth unemployment. It seems like where traditional, more traditional avenues are closing down, people are finding opportunities in new areas. And obviously, e-commerce, fast fashion, fast-moving consumer goods, manufactured goods is a very important part of China's economy because China's economy is plugged into that global market demand economy. The manufacturing industry in China, the e-commerce industry may be saved by people being able to tap into new methods of marketing like doing live streams and therefore creating an entirely new employment sector basically from scratch. But I think the most important thing to note about this is that this fast everything style shopping is no longer contained to single platforms. It's no longer contained to just, say, Amazon or AliExpress or something like that. It's got its tendrils now into basically every single platform. It's on social media. If you're looking for a product and you just type in its name online or you go to Etsy or something like that, a lot of that stuff is in fact fast fashion, especially if it's at a low and very competitive price. It probably has come from one of these factories. It may well be being shipped to you directly from China as opposed to being a more reputable store or what you would expect to see. Perhaps you thought you were buying from a store in your country or something like that. It turns out it's just like a front store or it's a drop shipping store or something like that. This is becoming way more common. I don't think people realize how deep this goes, essentially. I think we're really blurring the lines between what is consumerist capitalism and what is just content or something that you can enjoy. Over time, these Chinese e-commerce companies are really becoming experts in capturing not only Chinese audiences, but increasingly just a global audience in general. China's fast fashion market is experiencing steady growth, with an expected annual growth rate of 8.54% from 2023 to 2027, resulting in an estimated market volume of $314.9 billion by 2027. Soon it's going to become basically impossible to distinguish between a fast fashion retail company and just a regular company or a handmade good company, especially where manufacturers are straight up stealing ideas and stealing products from handmade sellers and then reselling it as their own product. For around 30 years now, we've known that a lot of our consumer goods have been made in China. Because we are not there to regulate or oversee exactly how or who is making these products, it's difficult for us to determine the quality versus the price that we're paying. So it's not really surprising that people are willing to pay lower prices for lower quality stuff to get that stuff faster if, when you're shopping in person, things are going to be exactly the same quality anyway. It's a zero-sum game, essentially. Like, on both ends, things are just eroding more and more until people will just be happy buying the lowest quality products for the lowest price and then replacing that every few years instead of actively encouraging manufacturers to increase the quality of stuff, even if it means having to pay more. So what is the future of these fast everything brands? In the past, the Chinese government has spoken more about wanting to boost internal consumption in order to support its economy. They've kind of changed their tune a little bit for a lot of reasons, one of those obviously being the pandemic, a slowing rate of growth in their own economy. And so because of this, it's particularly e-commerce retailers are not quite willing to give up on foreign markets just yet. Pinduoduo's surging revenue contrasts with the slowing growth of Chinese e-commerce giants, including Alibaba and JD in the third quarter. Alibaba reported 9% year-on-year revenue growth to reach 224.79 billion yuan during the quarter, while the net revenue of JD increased 1.7% from a year ago. The thing that's important now is not the quality of goods or even the type of goods that you're shipping. It's all about reducing shipping times, creating as much stuff as possible, marketing that stuff, making it discounted or cheap, and getting people to buy into it. When I read about the fact that Temu and Shein are actively investing in quicker shipping times than they were in the quality of their goods, I immediately thought of the 1-2-3 logistics system that the Chinese government announced a few years ago. China recently unveiled a program called the Global 1-2-3 Logistics Circle to expand the country's strength in the transport sector over the next 15 years, setting long-term goals for the industry to develop a modern, high-quality, and comprehensive national transport network. The aim is for one-day domestic delivery of goods in China, two-day delivery from neighboring countries, and three-day delivery to major global cities, according to guidelines jointly released last month by the Central Committee of the Communist Party of China and the State Council. If you're a regular consumer of my content, you'll know that China is very heavily invested in large companies, even large private companies, usually through something called golden shares. So the government and the party still has a controlling interest in a lot of these retailers. So it's in the government and the party's and the country's best interest that these retailers are successful and that all sorts of frictions are smoothed out in order for them to be able to hit their growth targets. These companies create jobs and they boost the economy through revenue and taxes. So it's not surprising that the government would then take this money and then reinvest that, not only obviously to help these e-commerce retailers, there are other reasons why they would want logistics times and like delivery times to be shortened quite a lot, because that obviously gives you better control over global shipping, which is becoming increasingly more important because globalization is only deepening, it's not going away. And of course, in return for the investment in making their lives easier by the government, these companies, because they are embedded in sort of the national Chinese system, are expected to give back to the system that is helping them profit. Pinduoduo on Tuesday pledged to donate the $372 million it made in the 3 months through June 30th toward the development of China's agricultural sector and rural areas. In total, it expects to donate 10 billion yuan, or $1.5 billion, towards such causes. The donation move by Pinduoduo follows a similar charitable pledge that internet and gaming company Tencent made last week, when it announced it would put 50 billion yuan, or $7.7 billion, towards achieving Beijing's goal of common prosperity for all people. The company said it would support increasing income for the poor and addressing education inequality, among other initiatives. In its statement on Tuesday, Pinduoduo also publicized its ongoing support of the government's social causes. It pointed to a commendation it received earlier this year from the ruling Communist Party for contributions to a major campaign to alleviate poverty, a key policy goal for Xi. Pinduoduo's announcement also comes days after the government launched a probe into the relationship between businesses and local governments in Hangzhou, the home of Alibaba. The Central Commission for Discipline Inspection, the Communist Party's top anti-graft watchdog, said it would require government officials to resolve any conflicts of interest involving themselves or their families. I said we would also talk about the role of AI in these companies, a bit like how AI is being used in other companies around the world. At the moment, it's still at a fairly basic level, like using AI assistant to help with customer service inquiries. Now that live streams are becoming even more important to the success of a business, especially if you're trying to, you know, make money on social media, we're starting to see the use of AI presenters for a lot of these companies as well. Zhang Jiying, an umbrella vendor in Yiwu, now has a digital assistant capable of promoting products in 36 languages, including English, French, and Spanish. The virtual representative can conduct live stream shows 24 hours a day, exhibiting movements and expressions akin to a human being. She has not only captured the attention of our regular customers, but also drawn in new fans, Zhang said. There are over 4,000 AI-powered virtual live streamers in Yiwu, and experts believe that such burgeoning digital technologies will bring fresh impetus to e-commerce and trade growth. Now, I'm not a Luddite by any stretch of the imagination, but I also don't think that all innovation is good innovation. I feel like the thing to worry about here is not just the fact that AI will obviously be taking people's jobs, particularly live streamers' jobs, but they're also talking about making these AI robots present 24 hours a day, which means that the wheel of e-commerce, the wheel of capitalist consumerism will never ever stop, essentially. So it's enabling the promotion of these products, the promotion of consumption constantly. And there's no way that anyone working against that can compete with, you know, someone that can work for 24 hours a day. I think the worst aspect of all of this for me is the gamification of e-commerce in general. This isn't too popular in the West right now, but I think it definitely has the potential to be because it's one of the ways that a lot of these e-commerce companies grow in China. First of all, this method is very, very popular in China, especially considering that gambling is banned in China. So I'm just going to leave you with this analysis of Pinduoduo, so Temu's holding company, that was made by a financial consultancy in 2022. Instead of competing head-to-head with Alibaba and JD's search-based platforms, Pinduoduo focused on creating an interactive and entertaining platform. Pinduoduo's model is based on entertaining users and giving them the chance to get deep discounts instead. The user behavior differs since customers log onto the platform without a specific item in mind, only logging on out of boredom or to see what deals are available that day. The best analogy is like that of a sushi conveyor belt. Deeply discounted deals of the day items are shown on the app, and users scroll down the page only until they find something that catches their eye. The discounts and items on sale differ every day, so users never know what they'll find when they log on, making it a fun treasure hunt experience. There are also daily check-in rewards and mini-games, where users could earn rewards and get free items or additional discounts on the site, thus encouraging frequent engagement. Key to its meteoric rise is also Pinduoduo's innovative team purchase model. In the early days, users could either pay full price or receive a discount when they teamed up with other users to purchase together. All the buyers needed to complete the purchase within 24 hours, or else have the entire group's order cancelled. This incentivized users to quickly invite friends and family, often through WeChat groups, to get the same great deal together. Additionally, Pinduoduo's early success can be attributed to it targeting an under-penetrated e-commerce segment, users in lower-tier cities. These cities tend to have fewer entertainment options, so users spent more time engaged on their phones. They also had lower disposable income, which meant many were willing to spend extra effort to get a great deal, such as sharing and promoting deals within group chats or playing games for discounts. Today, users order from the platform an average of 6.5 times per month, and it's this stickiness that has allowed the company to retain 900 million users without much incremental marketing. The aim of the gamification of e-commerce is to essentially embed a consumerist mindset into leisure activities as well. Instead of spending time with your family or friends, going for a walk in nature, reading a book, going to the cinema, any of that, you can play games on your phone or chat with your friends about the latest discount on products that you didn't even know you wanted to buy. So, are you ready for this new world of global capitalism where you spend all your money on products that you neither want nor need in order to feed a desire and an addiction that you didn't even know that you had? I definitely am not ready for that reality. I feel like society is slowly being divided between two sort of camps. Like, people who readily embrace fast fashion, fast everything, the commodification of everything, ease and comfort and affordability and availability of consumer goods, and people who are just like, oh God, this is a nightmare. I feel like the other side of the camp is slowly being outnumbered, especially as these e-commerce companies get even better at capturing people's data, retargeting them, and yeah, just basically appealing to that sense of wanting things faster, cheaper, delivered in a more fun way, and just employing every technique that they have to keep them coming back for more time and time again. It's always good to remember that China does not have like a free market capitalist system like we have in the West. Everything is closely monitored, watched, and controlled by the CCP and the state. Things would not be happening if China did not want it to happen. And so we can safely assume that this fast everything model is actually a part of the Chinese parties, the Chinese government, China as a country's ambitions to become not only the fastest growing economy, but also the largest economy. And if things continue as they are, I think they will reach that ambition very, very soon. So that's it for this episode, guys. Don't forget that I also have a Substack, a Twitter, I now have Instagram, I also now have Threads as well. Lord knows what I'm going to do on there. And yeah, sign up with the Buy Me a Coffee membership if you're interested in seeing more content from me. But that's it for this video, and I hope you enjoyed it, and I'll see you in the next one.